You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and it is Purple Friday, so that means Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire is back joining us here on the show. Matthew, here we are, 8 straight wins, 10-2, looking for 11 this week against Buffalo. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, man. You know, obviously on a roll now with Baltimore, and we said it last week. I don't know if there's any teams capable of beating the Ravens at this point.
Yeah, looking at Buffalo, they present another tough opponent for Baltimore. But again, this team is just on such a roll, such an unstoppable force, it seems like. Again, I agree with you. I don't know if there's a team that can stop the Ravens, but let's look back to last week. This 20-17 victory the Ravens were able to hand the San Francisco 49ers, their second loss of the season. Now both teams stay at 10-2, two top teams, but it seemed like Mother Nature played a huge part here. The Ravens offense wasn't up to its standard. Seemed like Lamar Jackson was into his own head with the weather. Did the weather play a huge factor in this game from what you saw?
I think so. I mean, I think whenever you're talking about the cold and the wet, and of course windy as well, which it was, you know, incredibly windy down there, you start talking about issues being able to plant your feet and guys getting blocked off the football more than they necessarily normally would. And we saw a little bit of that from Baltimore's defense. Obviously, they gave up a boatload of rushing yards. Some of that, I think, has to do with just not being able to get a good grip on jerseys and on the field itself, and being able to kind of lay in the type of hits that this defense is used to. And then certainly with the offense, you know, anytime you start talking about a wet football and throwing into the wind, you're going to start seeing a little bit more, you know, inaccuracy from quarterbacks, certain quarterbacks. And I think that kind of definitely played a huge factor into how close that game ultimately was.
And when you look at a game like this game against the 49ers, that close victory, battle-tested, would you rather see the Ravens play in these games that are close to kind of get them battle tested against good teams? Would you rather see them blow out these good teams? Which one do you think has more of an impact and will have more of an impact down the stretch and into the playoffs for Baltimore?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. You know, you want to see the occasional close game to make sure that, you know, your team can still can win those types of games. If you've beaten so many teams by so many points for so long, I wonder and worry about a team being able to get into a close game and be able to pull out the edge and not get down on themselves, which you see so often with so many other teams. The Patriots in the playoffs with Baltimore is kind of a good example of that type of thing. New England's never been really known for being down by a bunch, and when I think a team punches them in the mouth, they struggle a little bit to recover from that. Baltimore certainly hasn't shown that sign this year, but you know, I think it's good to be able to play those close games. But at the same time, when you play those close games, you tend to have to pull a little bit more out of your repertoire, out of your playbook. And in turn, I think you have to show a little bit more than you necessarily would for the next few weeks and into the playoffs than you might want to. And I think both those things, yeah, they have their positives and their negatives, but I'm happy with them blowing out teams, and then San Francisco can be their last tough game of the season.
Yeah, I'm all right with that as well. And when you look at the Ravens now, they're the number one team in the AFC. If the playoffs started today, the Ravens would have the tiebreaker over the New England Patriots. Both teams now stand at 10-2, but the Ravens, of course, won that head-to-head matchup, that 37-20 victory. Matthew, how important would it be for the Ravens to win these final four games and get home field advantage for the playoffs, to have the playoffs run through Baltimore? Home field advantage, when you look at the Ravens, could be very beneficial. How beneficial is it in your eyes?
Oh, I think it's massive. I mean, you look at this year coming off that bye week, they played exceptionally well against the New England Patriots. They blew them out by 17, and arguably it could have been more had they really kind of put their foot down to it. Last year, they came off the bye. They were off three-game losing streak, hit the bye, came back, and beat the Bengals, who weren't the Bengals of this year. You look back to 2017, for that matter, and you know, a kind of a similar thing ends up happening. You end up beating the Green Bay Packers 23-0. Baltimore off a bye under John Harbaugh is a more prepared team, a healthier team, a far more aggressive team, and just, if we're going to boil it all down, they're a better team coming off the bye. Getting that bye in the playoffs, huge. You might not necessarily be able to prepare against one opponent necessarily as well as you could off of a bye during your regular season, because you don't know exactly who's coming. But at this time of the year, teams are beat up. I'd much rather go into a game completely healthy, completely rested, or as rested as you can be in January, and face a team that just got done getting beat on for 60 minutes than I would being the other way around. That's going to pay huge dividends to a Baltimore squad that, you know, I said earlier in the season, I think is one of the better squads, one of the deeper squads in football, but just needs to remain healthy. Those two things are going to have a huge impact if Baltimore can stay the number one seed, get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, and can get that very, very important first round bye.
And you mentioned the depth that this team has. We're 12 games into the season, 4 games left to go, 3 quarters of the way done. The Ravens have the second best offense in the league, averaging 420.8 yards per game, the top rushing offense. And again, their defense has turned it around ever since those 2 500-yard games they gave up to the Chiefs and the Browns. We all know about Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram and Hollywood Brown, Earl Thomas, Marlon Humphrey, Matthew Judon. But when you look at this offense and look at this defense, Matthew, who would you give the unsung hero award to one player, both on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball?
I'd say the unsung hero has to be a guy like Nick Boyle on offense. I mean, a guy that, largely speaking, gets very little credit, even when he's playing well, which he's playing phenomenal football right now, gets next to no credit, even here in Baltimore. I think if you were to poll most fans and say, you know, which tight end has more receiving yards and more receptions, Hayden Hurst or Nick Boyle, I think almost everyone would say Hayden Hurst just automatically, and you'd be dead wrong. You know, the fact that I think that's the case makes him the unsung hero, in addition to, the guy's a phenomenal blocker. I mean, when he's on the field, and we saw it against San Francisco last week, when he's on the field and blocking, he is effectively another offensive lineman. The defense and offensive matchups are always about which side can get one guy extra. If you can get one extra offensive lineman against the defensive front and you're running the football, you're probably going to win that play. Vice versa, if a defense can get one guy on the outside and hit your quarterback, they're going to win that. So Nick Boyle being there is infinitely helpful to this offense. Defensively, I'm going to say a guy like Chuck Clark. Again, another guy I think that gets zero credit, even from us. I mean, largely speaking, we haven't really talked about him a ton this year. The guy's been playing phenomenal football, and he plays special teams. He plays defense. He is every bit what I think a lot of people expected Tony Jefferson to be throughout these last few years, and he's playing at that level despite just, again, no one knowing who he is. I don't think you deal with a guy like George Kittle last week against San Francisco, a tight end who leads their team in receptions, in targets, in yards, was tied for the top for touchdowns, receiving touchdowns for that team, and you held him to 2 receptions for 17 yards. And while it's not just Chuck Clark there that did that, he was an instrumental portion of keeping George Kittle down to such a few number of receptions, and he's been that way all season long.
Now, we saw a little bit of speculation start to rumble up yesterday and a few days ago as well, where Greg Roman on Wednesday said that, well, he was asked a question about him and, you know, his potential head coach search and the inquiries that teams might make for him. And he was quoted saying that he just has to keep the blinders on, focus on the job he's doing now. Pretty much what came of it was people were saying, oh, he's saying whatever happens, happens. You know, he might be leaving in the offseason. If hypothetically Greg Roman were to leave for a head coaching gig in the offseason, how worried would you be about this Ravens offense? Because they have the players, they just need the scheme. And Roman has been very instrumental about, you know, putting in his scheme and making sure these players are set up for success. But how worried would you be with the Ravens going with Lamar Jackson's third offensive coordinator in his 3 years?
I mean, I think that's never an ideal situation. And we saw that a lot with Joe Flacco. And I think that negatively impacted Flacco's development. Ultimately, when you have a new guy teaching you something every year and playbooks change, and it just takes forever to get that familiarity with that guy. And we hear it so often again with players, and Joe Flacco was never really in the best situation there either. Constantly a revolving set of wide receivers and even tight ends, thanks to injuries. Those things really hurt. They do. And they hurt a lot more than I think a lot of people realize. Again, look at New England this year, you know, a lot of new offensive weapons for Tom Brady. Guys aren't necessarily playing as well as they could. Sanu got brought in, but ultimately hasn't done very much. And a lot of that's because, well, it takes a while to get acclimated to one another, to know when I make this break, this ball is going to be right here, not up here or down here. It's not going to be, I'm not going to have to wait a half second. like I did with this other guy. Those things matter, and they matter significantly more, I think, with coordinators and quarterback coaches when it comes to a quarterback. If Greg Roman does leave, I'll be honest with you, I'm not terribly concerned about them replicating success in the future with Lamar Jackson in this offense. I don't think Greg Roman's doing anything necessarily out there or brand new. I don't think he's remade the wheel in any way, shape, or form. I think what they're doing is just they've kind of molded their offense around this misdirection idea and around Lamar Jackson as a threat on the field. And they're doing a lot of the things out of that type of a scheme that really you see other teams do, just maybe not as often. So Greg Roman, again, I don't think is doing anything crazy, but I trust this team also to be able to find someone that saw that success and is interested in maybe viewing this kind of like Baltimore's defense always has as kind of your stepping stone to another job. So I think Baltimore could get another guy in here to replace Roman that could do exceptionally well and might be another head coaching candidate.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you there, Matthew. But we are going to go to break, and when we come back, you're going to be getting into our full game preview between this matchup with the Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills. So stay tuned, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the second segment of this Locked on Ravens episode, this Purple Friday Locked on Ravens episode. Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire still here with you with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire, and we are here to give you our full game breakdown of this game between the Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills. And we always start with Lamar Jackson, Matthew, so let's start with him again. Going up against this Bills defense that ranks third in the league with just a tick over 300 yards per game allowed, how do you think the Ravens and Lamar Jackson are going to attack this Bills defense?
I think you have to run against them, and yeah, they have the third-ranked defense, but they're not great against the run. You know, they allow the 14th most runs, and more importantly, they allow 4.5 yards per carry per average against a team that, like Baltimore, who is first in attempts, first in yards, first in touchdowns, and first in yards per attempt on the ground. That is a recipe for disaster. Buffalo's going to have to kind of play up to Baltimore's rushing attack. Certainly, again, colder football, that definitely plays into it as well. The wind might be a factor. That might also play into it. So Buffalo's going to have to go ahead and load up their front to try to stop Lamar Jackson running around the edge and trying to stop Mark Ingram from just running them over. That's going to be a huge factor. And I think, you know, as you start looking at the stats, I have something coming up later on that in the red zone, Buffalo is actually pretty terrible when it comes to defending the pass. Between the 20s, don't throw against them. That's not the spot. But in the red zone, they allow a ton of touchdowns to wide receivers. They allow touchdowns quite a lot, actually, especially in once you get into the red zone. They are primed to be beaten in that way. And I think that plays perfectly into the hand of what Baltimore does, which is I'm going to run between the 20s, and then when we get down to the red zone, when things get a little bit more tight, that's when you don't know what we're going to do. Are we going to run? How are we going to run? Oh, are we going to throw? Which guy is going to get the touchdown here? Who do you have to cover? Is it going to be the tight ends? Nope, it's wide receiver. That type of misdirection, that type of indecision with Lamar Jackson at the helm is exactly why Baltimore is tops in the league in scoring.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. When you mentioned who's going to get the touchdown here, which one of these weapons are the Ravens going to utilize on each specific play? The Ravens have so many looks that they employ. All their looks can look the same, but the options and the misdirections and everything that they run out of that playbook, anybody could be getting the ball here. And I mean, Matthew, it's the question of the week every week. Mark Andrews or Hollywood Brown? It seems like Hollywood Brown got phased out of that 49ers game. It seems like you have to take away one of the Ravens' weapons, but then the other one will come back right to bite you. Do you think one of those guys has the big game here, or do you think finally we'll see a breakthrough from one of these other guys?
You know, that's always the tough question is like we mentioned every week, this is a pick your poison style of offense, and Lamar Jackson, much like Joe Flacco before him, doesn't really seem to have necessarily a quote-unquote favorite in a lot of ways. He's going to throw to the guy that's open. He's not going to necessarily force the football into spots that he shouldn't as often. And I like that about this offense, and I think that's why they're so difficult to defend. But naturally, when picking a guy to do well, man, that's always tough to do, mainly because this might be Marquise Brown's week that he's going to go off for 150 yards and three touchdowns. And we've certainly seen games like that from him so far in his rookie season. But we've also seen him, like you mentioned, get completely kind of shut out of games too. So I think with what Buffalo, again, if I'm Buffalo's defensive coordinator, if I'm Sean McDermott, the head coach of Buffalo, I have to stop that run first. And then I have to try to go, look, Lamar Jackson's going to have to beat me with his arm. And I have a good secondary, so I think I can do something with that. If that's the case, then it's going to be probably Marquise Brown that's going to go ahead and win. And like I mentioned just earlier, Buffalo is not good in the red zone when it comes to especially covering wide receivers. I trust them to really kind of double up on Mark Andrews with a lot of linebackers and maybe safety. But that's going to leave Marquise Brown one-on-one. That's a matchup that Baltimore likes a lot. And we've certainly seen that out of Baltimore so far this season and certainly throughout really the last decade. If I've got a speed guy one-on-one on the outside, I mean, you're throwing it up. We're just going to see what's going to happen. And I'm trusting my speed guy to come down with that football. And as we've seen with Marquise Brown throughout his early career, that's usually the case.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned the running game and, you know, how the Ravens have to run the football in this game against Buffalo, because while the defense overall is good, they're not that great against the run. You look at the stats from last week against San Francisco, Lamar Jackson led the team with 16 carries, and that's been unprecedented this season. Usually Mark Ingram is up there leading the team. Lamar Jackson is usually down around 7, 8, 9 carries. There will be games where he has those 17, 16 carry games. But in a game where there was a lot of weather going on, a lot of rain, a lot of wind, the Ravens' run game was strong and was utilized a lot because of that. Now, there's supposed to be a bit of wind in Buffalo on Sunday. Do you expect Lamar Jackson to be up in that double-digit carry range, or do you expect Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards to kind of split that time in the backfield with Lamar Jackson kind of coming in a short third?
I'd expect it to be the latter of the two. I'd expect, you know, you're going to want to pound the football down Buffalo's face, as I've said before. You're going to want to just beat him up inside, force him to go ahead and do that. And certainly Buffalo, when you look at the stats, they have the most missed tackles on that defensive line in the league. Against Mark Ingram, if I'm Mark Ingram, I'm licking my chops, because this could potentially be a career game for you given those stats. But like we saw against San Francisco, this is an offense that is moldable, that will quickly change their scheme. If things aren't working inside, then fine, chase Lamar Jackson. If you're going to go ahead and bottle up inside and stick a bunch of linebackers in there and bring your defensive linemen in a little closer to go ahead and just kill those gaps, fine, chase Lamar Jackson. Please, we're going to force you to go ahead and stop doing that, is what we're going to do. And by the end of the game, when you start spreading guys out and you start bringing more defensive backs in there, then Mark Ingram's going to bust off a 15, 20 yard carry, because then we're just going to start pounding you again in the fourth quarter. And that's exactly what happened against San Francisco. So while I would expect the latter to happen, while I would expect Lamar Jackson to get only a few carries and for Baltimore to really kind of hammer home the inside power run, if Buffalo does what I expect them to do, which is to load up the box against that, then Lamar Jackson's going to be one-on-one with probably a slow outside linebacker. Lamar Jackson's going to win that every single time, every team, every single time. And it would not shock me if Baltimore kind of starts to shade more that way in the second and third quarters, as if Buffalo's doing well against that, and then to switch it up in the fourth quarter once they kind of start reimagining things a little bit more.
And finally here, before we head into our second break, part of what makes that running game so good is the way the offensive line has been performing. You mentioned Ronnie Stanley and Marshall Yanda and Orlando Brown and Bradley Bozeman developing, and also Patrick McCurry. I wanted to get your opinion here, Matthew, on how Patrick McCurry looked on Sunday, as well as what you expect from this offensive line scheme-wise against this Buffalo defense.
Well, sadly, I didn't get a lot of chance to pay specific attention to McCurry throughout the entire game, but what I did see was, you know, a solid play. He got a little bit of help from Bozeman. He got a little bit of help from Yanda, which, you know, going into that game, duh, obviously that's going to be the case. A guy just stepping in three quarters of the way into the season is not going to be able to stand on his own, certainly at center. But he did a good job. He pointed out the right things. You could see him kind of making the right calls. And then naturally, San Francisco didn't get a ton of pressure on Lamar Jackson. They didn't do the greatest job stopping the run. So certainly McCurry seemed to have done his job well enough, much in the way of Skura before him. I think McCurry did a great job. If you look at PFF, actually, according to their stats and their points on him, he actually played better than Skura has this season. So hats off to McCurry there and the entire coaching staff to get him prepared for that. We'll see how he kind of does down the stretch. And if You know, that little bit of extra film is something that now defenses are going to start noticing, you know, some of his things, some of his nuances, and are going to be able to kind of play against that. We'll see as the next few games go on. But against San Francisco, he played phenomenally, again, with a little bit of help from Yanda and a little bit of help from Bozeman on either side of him, which, again, was totally to be expected. But against a great defensive line, I don't think you could ask for much better play than that.
What a turn of events from what it was supposed to be this season. I mean, you mentioned Matt Skura, who wasn't supposed to play as well as he did before going down with his injury. That center position in the preseason was one that people were extremely worried about. Skura played phenomenally before going down, and now Macari is stepping into his own. And you're right, it's going to be tough for a guy to come in there and perform at an extremely high level, especially an undrafted rookie who had never played center. He didn't play center in college. And now he's coming in on an NFL team that is one of the best in the league right now, if not the best. They are the best, and performing at a high level. So it's good to see Macari performing and along with the rest of that offensive line. But we are going to go to break here, and when we get back, we're going to be flipping gears, talking about the Ravens defense going up against Josh Allen and that Buffalo Bills offense. But before we do that, are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of big-time favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games for a much bigger payout. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.a-g today. You play, you win, and you get paid. Welcome back to the final segment of this Purple Friday Locked On Ravens episode. Kevin Allstriker of Ravens Wire still hanging with you here with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. And now let's flip the gears. Let's talk about this Ravens defense that held Jimmy Garoppolo and that San Francisco offense to 17 points last week, looking for the same success against this Buffalo Bills offense this week. And when you look at the Buffalo Bills offense, you have to start with Josh Allen. The second-year signal caller has 2,591 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 8 interceptions. But like Lamar Jackson, he is also a dual-threat player, averaging 4.6 yards per carry on 93 carries. He has 430 yards and 8 touchdowns on the ground. Now, Matthew, we have a pretty good dual-threat quarterback in our own with Lamar Jackson, but Josh Allen is a little different. He's a little more big-bodied, can take more hits, but he doesn't have that elusiveness that Lamar Jackson has. How do you game plan for Josh Allen?
I think you game plan for Josh Allen much like you would against a healthy Cam Newton. He's a guy that, like you mentioned, he's not going to dazzle you. A one-on-one on the outside, you're probably going to tackle him. He's not going to try to shift away and make a one cut and make you miss. He's more or less going to lower his shoulder and just try to run you over, which, you know, it has worked for him. Certainly he has touchdowns to prove it, but against a defense like Baltimore has, that's not exactly a good decision. And for all the talk of Lamar Jackson going down with an injury, Josh Allen has taken some vicious hits this season, strictly because, you know, the guy doesn't really know how to slide very well or use a sideline. He doesn't have the speed to really outrun a whole lot of guys. He's a guy that's just going to try to bully you, which, again, works, but there's only so long that stuff works. And against Baltimore, they're going to come in and smack him in the mouth. They're not going to be afraid of that by any stretch of the imagination. But I think you don't necessarily want to blitz him. He does fairly well against the blitz. He's mobile enough to be able to escape some of that and step up in the pocket and even pick up a few yards that way. I think you really just want to throw as many defensive backs in there and make him thread needle footballs into places, make him fit it into tight windows. That's not exactly his strong suit. And if you go ahead and keep him back there and you keep him kind of contained, make sure that he doesn't run out of the pocket or try to pick up extra yards. Make sure that you got a guy paying attention to him. I think you can have him sit back there. He'll feel the pressure in his head. He'll feel that phantom pressure, that time kind of elapsing. And he's going to try to force a football in where he shouldn't. And that's going to give you an interception. I think when you look at it, I think the game against Houston is kind of the prime example of how you play him. You just kind of keep him contained. Don't let him necessarily pick up a huge field in front of him with nobody there. Don't necessarily worry too much about him running.
And when you look at this Ravens defense in contrast to the Bills offense, they currently have a top 10 defense. They are ninth in the NFL in terms of yards allowed, with 323.4 yards per game allowed. And when you look at this Ravens defense, Matthew, which position group is going to be the X factor in containing this Buffalo Bills offense?
I think it's going to be the linebackers. I mean, you have a unit that I think has been historically weak for the last few years for Baltimore, and that's really the spot that I think most offenses attack, whether it be crossing routes over the middle, you know, getting those linebackers in a little bit of coverage, or trying to have them contain a tight end, or trying to have them, you know, come up and set the edge. That really has not been Baltimore's strong suit. That being said, is Baltimore has done a really good job of, in those types of situations, and we saw it last week against San Francisco, fine, we're not going to put as many linebackers out there. We're going to use more defensive backs. We're going to use Chuck Clark more in that hybrid safety, but really a linebacker role. So that way we get more speed. We can kind of contain you that way. And if you want to try to bully us inside, yeah, you're going to be able to do that a little bit. That's fine. But we'll take that. As long as you're not killing us on the big plays, as long as you're not busting off 40 yarders, we're going to win this matchup. Our offense is going to be able to get out to a lead. And then we're going to be able to shut down that inside run that you're going to be able to do. So we're not going to be that worried about it. Again, against a team like San Francisco that kept it close, you obviously saw some issues with that type of a defensive scheme. But against most teams, I mean, again, we can go down the schedule. It's a philosophy that has worked quite well for them so far. So I'd say the linebackers are going to be most important, but realistically, it's probably going to be that secondary. That is, they're going to load more of those guys in there to try to just contain everything, and certainly with John Brown and Cole Beasley as well. So I'm going to say linebackers, but really, I think my answer probably ends up being defensive backs, if I'm being honest.
Both of those position groups are going to be extremely important. I mean, you look at the defense as a whole. Each position group feeds off of the other one. If the linebackers are able to cover those crossing routes, the safeties don't need to help over the top. If the cornerbacks are able to shut down their receivers, they don't need safety help or linebacker help, and that allows more free rushers. It's all one big unit, and they all contribute in different ways to help each other out. But Matthew, this is a phrase that we've heard a lot as Ravens fans and Ravens analysts. It's just the Bengals. It's just the Dolphins. It's just the... Well, the Bills have had to hear a little bit about that, too, and this is really the first true test, if you're really thinking about it, for this Bills team. Their schedule up until this point, they beat the Jets, they beat the Giants, they beat the Bengals, they lost to the Patriots, they beat the Titans, beat the Dolphins, lost to the Eagles, then beat the Redskins, lost to the Browns, and then beat the Dolphins, beat the Broncos, and then finally beating the Cowboys. You don't look at any of those teams except for maybe the Patriots and say, those teams scare me in a game. With the Ravens coming to town for Buffalo, do you really read into what they've done and their strengths of schedule and who they've beaten, who they've been able to put points up on? Or do you just go into this game looking at this Buffalo team with all the talent that they have and say, you know, once that clock starts, it's football?
A little bit of both. I mean, I primarily look at matchups and, you know, do they have the guys necessary to stop what Baltimore wants to do? And does Baltimore have the type of guys and scheme to stop what Buffalo does? And I think they do. But to your point about the schedule, I think you can't overlook that. And for as much as Baltimore has gotten that, Baltimore has beaten a bunch of playoff teams. I mean, again, if we're looking at Buffalo's schedule, you're talking about New England, which was effectively their Super Bowl, obviously being a division game. That one's a huge one in week four. But I mean, everyone else, that's not really a scary set. The Cowboys is probably the second best team on there. And currently they're in the middle of a weird free fall with the coach potentially getting fired and Jerry Jones putting out, you know, some pretty big vibes of either win or you're done. So, you know, Cowboys aren't really all that scary. I mean, Denver, congratulations, I guess. Miami, you beat them by 17. Sure. But you lost to Cleveland by 3, and that's Cleveland at week 10, which wasn't good. And then Philadelphia by, you know, what, 18? I mean, they got blown out by Philadelphia at home. Until they can beat someone, no. You have to look at their schedule and go, yeah, I mean, you guys faced a bunch of tomato cans. If you can beat us and if you're able to go ahead and come into the stadium, into your own stadium in that case, and deal with a team like us, then hey, you deserve it. But this is really their first big barometer test if you're Buffalo to see, are we contenders or are we a team that just beat up on a bunch of bad teams that are going to squeak into the playoffs and get destroyed when we get there?
Yeah, I also think it's a little bit of both. You have to look at their schedule, but also, you know, we've heard it enough as Ravens fans. You can't overlook any team. I mean, the Dolphins have won 3 of their last 4 games. I mean, there are a lot of teams in the NFL that are overlooked. But I say it week in and week out, NFL teams are NFL teams. And so while you can look at the schedule and say, well, they haven't really played anybody of note outside of their loss to the Patriots, and maybe that Cowboys win as well, you still have to look at the team like Buffalo with all their talent and say, this is going to be a challenge. And speaking of a challenge, Matthew, your final score prediction right before we head out here. What do you think this game is going to look like?
Oh, man. Well, again, we kind of go through this every week where I don't necessarily want to say my real score because it just seems rude. but at the same time, I just don't look at anything that Buffalo's doing. I don't think they're a terribly good team. I don't think they're a 9-3 team, to be honest with you. I think they're a middling team that has beaten up on some bad teams, and they haven't faced a squad quite as talented and as physical as Baltimore is. And ultimately, that's the key. Baltimore is going to come into their home stadium, punch them in the face, and then go, what do you got? And if you're Buffalo, I don't think you got that much. And then soon as Baltimore gets out to a heavy lead, I've messaged plenty of my counterparts in our network and went, man, it's 14-0. That was a good game. Might as well start writing up that post-game article. And I've been right every single time, and I think that's going to happen here. So I'm saying it's Ravens 34, Bills 10. I think it's a big win, a big blowout win. And I think if you're Buffalo, you know, you shouldn't feel that bad about it. Baltimore's done it to, honestly, better teams so far this season. You're just kind of in the way.
I will put a disclaimer out there that I was victim to one of those 14-0 game overs. I doubted it. I said, you know, it's the first quarter. You can't get cocky here. And man, that was the Rams Monday night game. And boy, were you right. So I'm with you here. Do I think Buffalo is terribly, you know, one of the best teams in the NFL? I don't. But do I think they're going to pose at least a little bit of a challenge? I do. And part of that reason is because of their defense and because Josh Allen has improved, just like we've seen with Lamar Jackson. But with that being said, I think the way you described it was exactly right. The Ravens are going to come out, and if they get the ball first, I think they go and score a touchdown. And that might shock the Bills, and they're going to have to come out and respond. And when we've seen the Ravens defer, that defense outside of last week against San Francisco is usually very stout on the opening possession. And then you give Lamar Jackson the ball. The defense already gets a little tired because the Ravens hold the ball for so long. The offense on the sideline for the Bills gets cold. And so I think this game, my prediction is a little bit closer than people will expect it to be, especially Ravens fans. And I'm going to say a 35-27 victory for the Ravens. So maybe a little bit closer than most expect, but I do expect this Buffalo team to present a bit of a challenge. But in the end, I think the Ravens do come out with a victory here. But Matthew, that's all I have for you today. Again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'll keep tradition. Hopefully next week, we're sitting at 11-2, that 9-game winning streak, and hopefully sitting high atop the AFC once more.
Hey, man, I'm with you. I'm already booking them Super Bowl rooms.
Do it now. They're going to become expensive once the actual date comes. We're going to take a 2-day break here, but when we come back on Monday, we'll be getting into everything Ravens at Bills, talking about how the game went, who was the X factor, who did well, who did not. So stay tuned, and I will see you on Monday.